part. Okay, so my talk is going to be on modeling the kicks from sub-extreme spin boundaries. I'm going to just briefly review some results of that. So I'll propose new data for extreme spin boundaries. And then I'm going to talk about modeling the waveforms from intermediate mass ratio black hole binaries and show some results from full simulations of small Q, small mass ratio black hole binaries. Just as a convention, when I say Q, I mean the little mass over big mass, not big mass over little mass. So for me, small Q means the particle limit, essentially. Well, going towards the particle limit. Okay, so just a brief review of some recent and some old results on spinning configurations. So we did some new simulations with in the superkick configuration with basically with them with modest spins. Because we're using in this case Bo and York data, we were limited to a spin of 0.9. But even the spin of 0.9 itself gives you a bunch of junk radiation, which complicates the issues. So rather than going to 0.9, we went to 0.8, but we decided to look at this just to see the modeling of the kick as a function of the spin for relatively modest spins. And what we look at is we try to fit the spins to a functional form, kick to a form which is goes like the cosine of an angle, the angle between the infall direction and the spin direction, and the cosine of three times this angle. And we want to see how these two functions, V1 and V2, vary with eta. And so we fit these as a function of alpha, of the spin, and we fit these as a function, and we find that the V1, for the most part, is linear in the spin. So basically, this is the classic superkick term that we expect, cosine theta, which is proportional to the spin. These spins are anti-aligned, so this is actually proportional to delta, and it gives you around the prediction around 3,600 kilometers per second for the maximum. And then if you look at this V3 term, well, it actually is mostly dominated by a cubic term in this spin. And basically what we find is that, first of all, you see that the signs are different, but they're not exactly 180 degrees out of phase, so they don't exactly cancel. So it predicts a maximum recoil of between around 3,500 and 3,700, and this is somewhat lower than previous predictions, and this shows a plot of these new possible, predictions versus some results that we've had, and low spins, and including, we also added this on the plot, although this wasn't used to fake the fit, with this 0.92 spin, just to see that actually is consistent with an overall result we had for 0.92. But again, that was a system which had a lot of eccentricity due to junk radiation. Okay, and the highest spins that we did highest spins for full orbits in Innisfail was these runs that we did with Dyeen, where we used a spin of 0.92 in Bo and York data, which had again severe junk radiation. But even so, which complicated issues because it introduced eccentricity. It also the black holes are very small. Plus, it's hard to analyze the system initially because if you look at this system, you actually calculate the binding energy. You find it has the wrong sign because there's just a huge amount of junk radiation sitting just outside the black holes. But still, we found some interesting results. We found a remnant spin, which is roughly equal to our initial ingoing spin, around 0.923. And we actually measured a recoil of around 3,300 kilometers per second. Okay. So that's Bo and York, and that maxes out at 0.92. But that's not really good enough because there's some evidence that black holes have spins as large or larger than 0.97. And so we need data which gives us these kind of spins. And if you're using the puncture approach, you're going to run into a problem. And that is the puncture approach is basically the initial data is basically uses the fact that you could combine these two regions of space-time onto one slice, and the puncture is basically this whole extra universe hidden at a point. But this structure doesn't exist in the maximal case. The slice can just extend to the horizon, and that's it. So your puncture is the horizon. So rather than being a sphere infinitely far away, it actually is the horizon. And it has, in the standard puncture coordinates, it has zero width. And so you're completely unresolving the horizon, which isn't a good thing. So you're not going to be able to go to maximum using the puncture approach. Okay, but the choice, what limits a spin is the choice of the metric, which that the metric is conformally flat. By changing from conformally flat to conformally curved, you can increase the spin dramatically. And so this has been done, but we did some test simulations with this, and of course there's a similar procedure from Lovelace, and basically what we do is we start with a metric, which is the flat space plus a correction, which is the Kerr correction. We superimpose them. We use attenuation functions, which basically just guarantee that the Hamiltonian constraint is going to give us a well-posed elliptical problem. And then we try to solve this. In terms of for the momentum constraint, you can use for the extrinsic curvature, you can use you should use Kerr extrinsic curvature. But it turns out that we did some tests, and Bowen York actually works just fine. So basically, that's the construction, and you basically got to solve a bunch of equations, which I gloss over for right now. But we did some preliminary tests, and we were using the standard puncture approach, which means that as we approach a maximal black hole, the horizon size is very, very small, requires very large resolutions, very large resources, and we really couldn't dedicate enough resources to really resolving this problem, so we just did some short simulations to see what kind of spins we got. And you can see here that for certain simulations, we were actually able to get very large spins. In fact, we got this kind of unphysical runaway, which is just lack of resolution. But for the most part, we're getting around 0.98, which is where we were trying to get. And it sticks around there, roughly speaking. And we do get part of an orbit. But that's as far as we went with the simulation. And even that was costly because of the extreme resolution required for this. Now, a related difficult problem is the extreme mass ratio, which is, again, a problem of very different scales. The small horizon in this case is going to be very small, and so that's going to make it hard to evolve the system. You need a lot larger resolutions, and you need to just have globally, you need to have the errors in your field sufficiently small that you get the right dynamics coming out. And if you do a little playing with some numbers, supermassive black holes and mass ranges in the roughly 10 to the minus 5 to 10 to the 10, so you expect mass ratios anywhere from 10 to the minus 5 all the way to 1 in when these things merge. So, on the other hand, if you allow for supermassive black hole and the stellar mass black hole binary merger, well, then you can get much smaller Qs. And so we need to start to examine the small Q regime. And so these small Q regimes. This has been something which many groups have worked on. So Baker et al. First published a simulation with Q equal 1/6. Gonzalez et al. With Q equal 1/10. And Lusto et al. Published one, a spinning one with Q equal 1/8. And Mueller and Brugmann came up with some different gauge choices, which help evolve these small Q binaries. And so what we decided to look at is, since Q equal 1/10 was possible, we wanted to get some practice evolving Q equal 1/10, but then to see, okay, is Q equal 1/10 really close enough to the particle regime that we can start using approximate formula to actually get the waveform? So the idea was that we're going to model trajectories for black hole binary end spirals from small q, with small but not zero q, so something numerically feasible. And then we were to look at the track. And we were to treat this track as a function of q and use that as input into a perturbative calculation. Basically, essentially, we're using numerical relativity to calculate the radiation reaction force. And so we're going to model the waveform as a simple model trajectory, plug that in to a perturbative calculation, get out the waveform from the perturbative calculation. And of course, then the test would be to actually compare that with the full numerical waveform. So for this first test, we evolved a q equal 1/10 eccentric binary for the last 3.5 orbits. And then we checked that we could obtain convergence tracks and waveforms. And then we plug this into the perturbative approach. And then we compare the results. So the tracks and the waveform were convergent. It's unfortunately, it was a highly eccentric binary. So if you look at this, you actually see two orbits touching each other. So there's one, and then another one touching, and then it finally moves in. And I say unfortunate because what we originally did was we used 3.5 PN evolution to get the parameters for this binary. And the hope was that that would give a relatively low eccentric binary. And of course, well, the end result was it didn't. So that technique to get it for getting low eccentricity binaries doesn't work out. You are able to reduce the eccentricity. We end up using an iterative technique, and I'll show you that in a few slides over. But let's just look at this binary for the moment. If you look at the waveform, so this is the black line there is the numerical waveform. And then these are the perturbative waveforms based on the trajectory. And this is a perturbation based on a Schwarzschild background. And what you see basically is that you get relatively good agreement between the perturbative and the numerical in phase, between the perturbative and numerical waveform, until the merger you're going to cease to get agreement, because at that point the perturbative calculation no longer takes any information from the trajectory. It is now simply ringing. It's now simply a ringing Schwarzschild black hole. And since this is really a Kerr black hole, it's going to ring at a different frequency than the Schwarzschild black hole. And that's the reason for that discrepancy at later times. The plots over here show the convergence of the track and of the waveform, and basically we were able to see the convergence of those two quantities. But so we wanted to explore other details about this. So one of the things we want to do is reduce the eccentricity, and then to also increase the separation. And these are two pretty expensive operations. And I also want to see what happens when we decrease Q. And Hiroyuki, as he showed you in his talk the other day, added these spin corrections to the perturbatively so that we can get a perturbative waveform, which includes spin corrections, and therefore we'll get a much better ring down. So we looked at the binaries with different separations and different eccentricities. So this plot here shows the orbital radius versus time. This was the original binary that we published in the PRL. And you can see it's quite eccentric, and it oscillates quite dramatically. And this red binary is one which is slightly further out and slightly less eccentric. But after doing some more work, we were able to get a binary which is even further out, evolve it completely, and you see that has a very low eccentricity. But if you look at these, you'll see that there's one thing in common to all of them, and that is this initial jump in the radius. And this is due to the initial data. And what this does is, although this might show up for any binary, relative to the actual change in the radius for a given orbit, this becomes more and more significant as Q gets smaller. So basically what happens is you start with one binary, and then you jump to a different parameter, different place in parameter space than you think you are, and then you can evolve and you can continue. But the complication then is, how do you relate the parameters of this binary with the parameters of the binary if you want to, let's say, continue this waveform backwards in time, how you would do that? So you have to be able to figure out what the actual configuration of your binaries is. By the way, this is, if you take the full, this is the comparison of the post-Newtonian and numerical waveform, not the post-Newtonian, the perturbative and numerical waveform for this large separation. And you can see, including spin effects, you see very, very good agreement. There's a slight amplitude deviation, but you can't even see it on this plot. Okay, so then we decided let's look at different mass ratios. So this is this compares a q equal 1/10 and q equal 1/15 a simulation. And what I've done here is I've rescaled the q equal 1/15 waveform by the factor of 15 over 10. so that we can see that the waveform actually scales with Q. This plot here shows the convergence, or I only did two simulations at this point. The third one isn't done yet. The low and the medium resolutions, and you basically look at the overlap at early times in the waveform, and you can see that at late times you get this exponential increase in the phase error, and so actually at late time when you actually had the merger, you actually dephased. So it's around 70 degrees out of phase, which isn't good, but it will disappear. This is an eighth order code, so that's going to disappear pretty rapidly with resolution. Okay, other things to look at is here. This increase, this puffing out, what I said, of the orbit, notice that it doesn't scale with Q. So I haven't rescaled these numbers. This is strictly the orbital radius for Q equal 1/10 and Q equal 1/15. And you can see that this jump in the orbital radius seems to be independent of Q, which means that it's going to become more and more of a problem as you go to smaller and smaller Q, as that jump becomes much larger than the actual delta R over one orbit. Other things to note is that you get, as you might expect, a kind of a universal in-spiral once you're kind of inside the ISCO region. But as you move out, you get the difference in tracks between Q equal 1/10 and Q equal 1/15 becomes significant. Okay, and just I can give you some few results about this Q equal 1/15 run, which hasn't been published yet. The amount of energy radiated was around 0.22%, which is consistent with the measure of change in the mass of the black hole, the ADM mass versus the mass of the final black hole. Similar agreement in the radiated energy. The kicks that I measure around 33.5 kilometers per second, and the predicted kick is around 34 kilometers per second. So definitely these are very consistent. The error bars here is at least in the 5, if not in the 3. And for the prediction of the kick. Okay, so just in summary about these extreme mass or intermediate mass black holes is that we're going to need some new initial data for small mass ratio and extreme spin. For extreme spin, it's just because you can't max out at 0.9 if we've got to simulate physical binaries at 0.97. For the small mass ratio, because this change in this orbit is probably of this orbital parameters is going to be more and more significant as you go to smaller Q. So we can do relatively small Qs. Q1/15 was doable, but it's very expensive. It's expensive both to run a single simulation, and especially it's expensive if you have to reduce eccentricity. That implies multiple simulations to get the eccentricity and then to use this iterative procedure to reduce it. So it is quite expensive to do. The simulations are, as I said, are very expensive, easily hundreds of thousands of SUs. But using these combined numerical and perturbative techniques does increase the efficiency. It increases the efficiency both because you don't need to extract your waveform very far, because you can use the perturbative calculation to do the waveform extraction. So you don't need very big grids. You just need enough that you don't get significant contamination from the boundaries. You don't need to complete a full simulation because you only need the particle trajectory up to the horizon. And you're going to be able to use numerical waveforms to kind of give a model which will allow you to then extrapolate waveforms to smaller Q, which are simply no longer feasible. And this is a rich area for further development. We need, in order to really handle this one, we need more efficient AMR, new initial data, better gauge conditions, better perturbative, more advanced perturbative calculations for different backgrounds. And I think this is going to be an exciting area in the next few years, at least.
Anybody? If no one has one, I will ask you one. While Mark sets up. So this is a little similar to what Damur and Nagar were doing, but with trajectories computed from the effective one-body dynamics.
Yeah.
And to me, one of the problems with this is that you're using a Schwarzschild background to compute the radiation. So are you thinking about comparing with them? And do you, how far you can, how far can you go in mass ratio, you know, before this becomes impractical?
As far as how far we can go in mass ratio, I mean, we'll know when we try. It gets more and more expensive as you, I mean, Q equal 15 is significantly more expensive than Q equal 10 because you got to add extra levels of refinement. As you keep doing that, you're adding levels of refinement, then you run into scalability issues with your AMR, so it gets difficult. But as to what the limit, I'm not sure what the limit is.
Next speaker.